Here is Williams Hall with the latest news. Mr. Hall is substituting this morning for Orson Welles, who is suffering from laryngitis. We'll get to the news in just a moment. It won't be long before you'll be seeing many new radio sets in the stores again. And among them will be one kind you'll find especially good. You may not have seen its name before, but actually this name has been on the very finest types of radios for more than 15 years. The name is Lear, L-E-A-R. And the radios it's been on since 1930 have been radios for aircraft. Aircraft radios have such an important job to do that the most advanced engineering, the finest materials, and the most expert craftsmanship are required in building them. This is the kind of manufacture that Lear knows. It's the kind that has become ingrained in Lear. This is why you hear people say, Lear is the name men fly by. Now, Lear is making home radios. And just as you would expect, these radios are as fine, as dependable, as high in quality as Lear knows how to make them. In Lear radios, you find the newest developments. To mention one, there's the Lear wire that remembers. This is a simple way to make lasting records of the good times you have, the songs of the children, the talents of your friends. Or you can record radio programs right from the air. These recordings can be just a few words, or they can be hours long. You can play them and replay them over and over indefinitely. Or if you don't want to keep them, you wipe them off the wire simply by recording something else. Radios have never had anything like this before. It's one of the reasons you'll want your radio to be a Lear radio. Now, Williams Hall, substituting for Mr. Welles, brings you the latest news. The opinions are his own and do not necessarily represent the views of Lear Incorporated.
Civil war is said to be raging in northeast and central China. A Chinese communist spokesman has told foreign correspondents of civil warfare in 11 provinces. And Chongqing reports say central government troops and Chinese communist forces are engaged in daily skirmishes in Shaanxi province. Marshal Yan Shishan, Chongqing appointed Shaanxi governor, says daily clashes have been going on for the past 12 weeks and that the situation approaches a state of undeclared civil war. The 63-year-old marshal says government forces have suffered 2,000 casualties in September and October during the battle for Changxin in southeastern Shaanxi. Marshal Yan claims that the communists had gathered a force of 64 regiments before they seized the strategic city. The aging marshal has returned to Chongqing for the first time in 8 years to report to Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek in person. He says there are records of 40 to 50 engagements in a single day. Well, that is one side of the story, and now here's the other. The New China Daily, a communist newspaper, flatly accuses the Chung government with the employment of 800,000 troops against Red Armies in northern and eastern China. Reports from Admiral Barbie's flagship off Hulutau, Manchuria, says Chinese communist soldiers have taken shots at one of the admiral's barges. The American barge was driven away from the barricaded Hulutau pier by a shower of rifle bullets from gray-uniformed communist troops. The commander of the Chinese Communist Fourth Army at Hulutau has formally apologized to Vice Admiral Barbie, and the incident has been smoothed out. But observers point out, this too tells of the tense situation in China and indicates communist determination to hold their own against Chiang Kai-shek or even American intervention if it should come. While this has been happening in China, reports from Bombay tell of continued political unrest in India. The Indian Congress Party shows no inclination to rest until British control of India comes to an end. As a matter of fact, it has passed a resolution demanding that the British quit India. This declaration says, the Indian Congress Party's primary object and paramount duty is to benefit the masses by raising the economic, cultural, and spiritual levels and removing unemployment. The resolution also says that the Congress Party is in favor of a world federation of free nations and would back world peace and cooperation. But they argue, and we quote again, only on the basis of freedom and elimination of imperialism everywhere can world peace be established. Political unrest also prevails in Europe. A spokesman for Julius Maneu, the Romanian peasant party leader, told reporters in London that there is no constitutional government in Romania today. He charged that the present Groza government is not qualified to rule. Maneu's London spokesman added that the absence of normal relations between the king and the government has created what he calls an absurd situation. The Groza regime has denied such allegations. Supporters of the Groza government have claimed that Maniu represents reactionary interests, those sections of the Romanian people who allegedly wish to return to the old days, which supposedly served only the interest of the privileged class. At the same time, the Swiss radio reports that Prime Minister Groza has announced that democratic national elections will be held in the near future. Groza has pledged himself not to touch British and American capital should he be returned to office. While all these reports add up into an ever-growing need for an international forum to iron out these differences, we receive word that the United Nations organization has made another step forward. The first General Assembly of the Global Peace Forum is expected to be held at London during the first week of January. The governments and leaders of the world are giving a lot of thought to President Truman's Navy Day declaration on United States foreign policy. American commentators in general praise the president's summary of American foreign policy. Most of them say the speech heralds full American cooperation in the preservation of future world peace. Diplomatic observers in Washington are agreed that it was an excellent statement of broad United States objectives. Some, however, were uncertain of the reception Mr. Truman's policy statement would get abroad, especially from nations with whom relations are strained. The London Sunday newspapers welcome the president's assertion that strong American forces will be maintained to avoid future wars. The Sunday Dispatch says the speech contains, and we quote, much that is hopeful, accompanied, perhaps inevitably, by material that will prompt renewed speculation. British political sources regard the Navy Day pronouncement as notice to the world that the United States intends to stand firm in her present position. Some London sources showed disappointment at the lack of specific detail. They point out that Mr. Truman gave no hint as to whether the Big Three have agreed on how to revive the Foreign Minister's Council. The Russian newspapers prominently carry the president's address. A full resume is given and a text of 12 points of American foreign policy is printed. But so far, there has been no editorial comment. Soviet sources point out that Generalissimo Joseph Stalin, within the past year, has asserted that the wartime coalition should be able to organize peace. It is predicted in Moscow that important developments will soon come from United States Ambassador Harriman's recent visit to Premier Stalin in his vacation retreat. The French Sunday newspapers agree with President Truman's foreign policy outline. Some are critical of his revelation that America intends to keep the secrets of the atomic bomb. They suggest that if the world's riches are to be at the disposal of all peoples, as the president suggested, then the secrets of atomic energy should be shared. A French leftist paper said, nobody can contest the generosity and idealism of Truman's 12 points, but let us wait until Truman translates his words into acts. The resistance newspaper Combat said, the speech seems above reproach when it gives a new and welcome publicity to the Atlantic Charter. It appears the president doesn't intend to reveal the atom bomb secret at present, so a certain awkwardness hovers over his words. A conservative Paris paper finds encouragement in United States reaffirmation that she has neither territorial or aggressive intentions. But some French sources show disappointment that President Truman says nothing definite about American policy toward Germany or Indochina. Some Swedish observers compared Mr. Truman's 12 points to the late President Wilson's 14 points. They praise what they call the straightforwardness and uncompromising idealism the president showed. Other Swedish sources believe the Navy Day statement was meant to inform Russia directly of American foreign policy. They also predict Premier Stalin may make a similar Soviet policy announcement in his November 7th speech. From Jerusalem, the Palestine Post comments that the president's words, along with declarations by England's Foreign Secretary Ernest Bevin last Friday, indicate a common statement of Western principles. The paper says Truman's points not only warn Russia and check enthusiasm within the Soviet orbit, but reassure a large part of the world concerning the reality of the American attitude. Now for a glance at home front developments. In Washington, the Army announces that it will demobilize and convert to peacetime basis its worldwide weather service for the Air Forces. Originally costing $40 million at its peak, the Air Force's weather service contained 857 observation and forecasting stations. The 17,800 men who man these global units will be reduced, and the foreign units turned over to the countries in which they are located. On Capitol Hill, Senator McMahon, the chairman of the Senate Atomic Energy Committee, says his group will meet for the first time next Tuesday. Dr. Morris Perlman, a prominent physicist, told fellow members of the Los Alamos Atomic Bomb Project that in a future war, a nation might suffer decisive damage before learning the identity of its attackers. And as a safeguard, Perlman urged a strong international authority as the only way to control atomic weapons of war. The auto industry is waiting for labor's answer to a compromise proposal on union demands for a 30% wage lift. The vice president of the CIO United Auto Workers, Walter Reuther, is expected to reply today to General Motors' suggestion that workers settle for a 45-hour week with a 6% wage boost for straight-time work. This would be only for the duration of the reconversion period. Observers believe this suggestion, originating with GM President C.E. Wilson, probably will be turned down, mainly because labor fought long and hard for the present 40-hour week and wouldn't want to give it up. The General Motors president recognized this fact and said labor's first impression probably would be that it is a reactionary idea, not in the interest of labor. However, he added, it's no more reactionary than working longer hours in the war emergency. Wilson went on to say that the present overtime pay of 50% on extra hours over 40 discourages employers and business generally from planning such extra hours of production. Therefore, he pointed out, production would tend to be reduced at a time when American and world markets are clamoring for peacetime products to fill a long pent-up demand. In conclusion, the General Motors chief executive said that if a 40-hour week proved sound in pre-war days and a 48-hour week was good during the war, a 45-hour week would be just as sound for the reconversion period. And now your attention, please, for an interesting announcement.
Lear has been making fine radios since 1930, aircraft radios. During all that time, Lear developed techniques of fine manufacture that are now benefiting the new Lear home radios. When you see and hear these Lear home radios, you'll say to yourself, what wonderful instruments. And you'll be absolutely right. For there'll be a whole line of sets, handsome and capable. Some will have television. Some will include high-fidelity, static-free FM. There will be models with record players and automatic record changers. And some will have the Lear wire recorder I mentioned a little while ago. But with all these features and with their unusual excellence of manufacture, Lear radios are not high in price. They range from a top of about $500 for a masterpiece console combination to about $19.95 for a smart, efficient table model. Of course, the best way to see what Lear has done for home radio is to hear the new sets themselves. We expect you'll be able to do that before the holiday buying season. We'll keep you posted. Because we know when you look at and listen to a Lear radio, you'll be convinced that here is a radio that gives you more value for every dollar you pay. The Lear radio. L-E-A-R. And now a final word from Williams Hall, substituting for Orson Welles.
Here is a brief resume of this morning's news highlights. Civil warfare is reported raging in 11 provinces in northeast and central China. A communist newspaper charges that the Chongqing forces are using some 800,000 troops against the communists. Overseas reactions to President Truman's foreign policy speech are generally favorable. Russian newspapers are carrying the full text of Mr. Truman's speech without comment. Observers predict that Marshal Stalin will state the Soviet position in his speech on November 7th. The Auto Workers Union is expected to give a negative answer today to the General Motors plan.
This is the American Broadcasting Company.